And last week, we let you know that we were going to have another gardening show. So gardeners or wannabe gardeners out there, we'll get some advice today. Joining us this morning, Lee Skidmore and also C.J. Davenchofer, and they're here to give us all sorts of tips. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for inviting us.
Thank you very much for being here. And I know I had contacted Lee after the last show and mentioned that we did have a question about organic gardening. And so she invited CJ along since he is an organic gardener, I'm guessing. And we're going to talk about what organic means. What is GMO? Is it always good? Always bad? Is it always bad, I guess, is the question, because some people avoid that. And black spots on rhododendrons growing outside in containers and dividing primroses are kind of the topics, I guess, that you've had some questions.
I had questions on the rhodies, the containers, and primroses at the plant sale, and I thought, well, now's a good time to give some advice.
Okay. So maybe let's start off with organic. Let's do that. So what is the definition of organic? And we'll just start with that simply, and I'll ask more questions as we get there.
I don't know the particular definition for organic, but right offhand, but it's basically you're using organic matter, manures, and putting that into your garden instead of chemicals. And these chemicals are basically petroleum-based chemicals, and that would be your Osmocote, any of these slow-acting fertilizers that people like to use. So that's chemical gardening, I guess, or conventional gardening, and organic is basically trying to close your loop in your farm or your garden. So you're using a lot of the inputs that you already have in your garden as waste, and that's veggie waste, animal waste, twigs and leaves, and you're building up your organic matter in your soil and basically diversifying your biology to make it available for your plants.
And that is the fertilization of it. Are you also not using pesticides, correct?
Yes.
Right.
And that's no pesticides, no herbicides, insecticides. And there are, though, fungicides and insecticides that are organic. And these are basically products that use essential oils as part of the deterrent.
And how do you, is it like labeled that way? Do you make them yourself? How do you come about, say, organic pesticides?
You can make them yourself, but if you wanted to go to the store and buy them, you would look for something that's OMRI approved, O-M-R-I. And that's basically the organic standard that people use in the United States.
And so you do organic gardening?
Yes.
I take it. How do you run into any, I guess, different challenges or different things that someone might not run into if they're using conventional materials?
I guess, pests would be one, and weeds. And in organic farming, you're not trying to really eradicate everything, and you can't, versus in a monoculture, you can tend to put one chemical on it to kill all the bugs. In organic gardening, you're trying to just kind of keep everything at a certain...
kind of in harmony.
Exactly. a very good stability. And so you'll have slug attacks. You'll have different things. And you'll have to deal with those as you come along. But the idea is just try not to have your whole crop be destroyed by one thing. And trying to be proactive about your gardening so that you don't get these huge infestations. So being proactive in organic gardening is probably the best choice versus in a conventional gardening, they see something happening and they put a chemical on it, and that's usually it.
And a specific question that was asked had to do with seeds. Are those organic seeds? If that... it's a seed came off this plant. What is the definition, I guess, of an organic seed? If it has to come from a garden that was done organically, or is it when does that affect the seed? Does that make sense?
I don't know so much about that as far as being affected by anything. But let's say you couldn't tell a difference between a non-organic and an organic seed if you bought it without a label on it. And you grew it out. versus, let's say you had a non-heirloom seed, which is, so an heirloom seed is organic, but it's a really old seed. So it's a seed that's been here for thousands of years, basically. And those offspring are fertile. So whatever seed you would take from that, previous year, you could save that seed and grow it out. Versus, let's say like a Monsanto seed, like a GMO seed, you couldn't grow that one out again next year. Let's just say that. For one, they have a patent on it, and so you'd have to buy that seed from them every year. And two, a lot of those offspring aren't viable over 1 year. And so that's kind of one of the problems that people tend to, or one of the questions that people have is even the viability of those seeds over a period of time.
They're kind of good for the year or something.
Exactly. When you couldn't actually plant them unless you had permission from the company that actually patents those seeds. So they own all the DNA in that seed.
So can you buy, well, I guess that, but can't you buy GMO seeds or no? You have to.
So
that's, it's just the labeled like non-GMO. Either,
yes.
When you look at labels, either says, it says nothing.
Yes.
Or it says non-GMO.
Yes.
And if it says nothing, what does that mean? You don't know.
It means you don't know.
Exactly.
It's probably not a GMO seed, or they would say, I mean, you have to buy it like from Monsanto or somebody that's producing seeds.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's if you buy non-GMO, you don't have to worry. You're going to get the same viability rate, the same quality plant, the same taste in your vegetable or tomato, lettuce. You know, there's not. You can't say, "Oh, this is GMO lettuce. I can taste it." And it's usually large-scale seed purchase. It's not I can go to the store and buy. So.
Right. Oh, yeah, and we'll get to that in just a second. So if I go to a store, I'm buying a pack of seeds. It just is a pack of seeds. If it's not labeled organic, though, or labeled non-GMO.
If it's not labeled organic, then for one, the grower who grew that seed is probably not using organic practices. And so that's why they wouldn't have that on there.
And I guess if that makes sense, the question I think the person had is, if I buy this seed that wasn't done, the plant wasn't grown organically, if then I plant it and grow it organically, is it essentially the same? Does that make sense? Because I think that was the thing, is someone had commented, I want this to be organic.
I think if you start with an organic seed and care for it organically,
it's 100% guaranteed.
It would be organic fruit that you would eat. And I think those seeds then, if they're raised organically, like your tomato seeds, and you save them, those would be organic seeds that you would plant next year.
Right. It's the ones that I guess are unknown.
If
they aren't labeled organic, does that make sense? If they're not labeled organic.
They're not organic.
They're not organic, but if I use organic practices, will the fruits be organic from that plant?
I think they will from the same.
I would consider them organic.
I'm putting you on the spot, I know, but that was kind of the question. It was like, I don't know how you'd answer that.
Well, always my concern is, let's say you take a conventional seed and you grow it out, and it does really well that season, and it goes to seed. Now, since you don't know if it's organic and you don't have any other certifications like it's heirloom or anything like that, then you don't know if that seed is going to be good for next year. Because a lot of these conventional seeds that you buy, these are hybrids. And so they hybridize two seeds together or two plants together and you get a seed. But a lot of those seeds are unfertile. So you can grow that out, but that second generation of plants will be unusable.
Okay, that makes sense. Very good. Okay, and let's talk about that, genetically modified plants, and why is it done, and when are they good and not always bad, I guess is the question.
Well, we would like to stay out of the political arena with this. if you explain GMO.
So GMO is basically you're taking genetic material from, let's say, one plant, let's say what would be a really good example is the
rice, like, maybe, or wheat, corn.
Okay.
Corn is highly GMO.
Yeah. So you're taking attributes from one plant and you're putting it into another. So let's say I want to grow corn, but I want it to be resistant to Roundup, which is a product they use a lot for systemic pesticides and chemical fertilizers. So they'll take a gene that's resistant to Roundup, and they'll insert it into a corn gene, basically, which basically makes it when you spray Roundup, it doesn't kill it. It's basically what it is. So you're taking an attribute from another plant and you're actually inserting it into another plant. And this could be done with animals as well and plants. So.
And an example someone gave me as well is there are drought resistant. You can genetically make something
yes.
drought resistant. So if it otherwise wouldn't grow in a particular country or area, it's possible that you can grow that crop there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And even, you know, animals, they insert, like the silkworm, they've started inserting the gene of the silkworm into different animals because the silkworm is so small and it produces such a small amount of silk per animal. They're inserting it into larger animals to try to get more production of silk. And so you might have a cow that
produces silk?
Will lactate. it will lactate, actually, out and then... In the actual milk will have silk in it that they could process.
Oh,
out of
wow.
It.
That's
yeah.
That's weird.
That is.
So GMO seeds can be used for good purposes, like making something drought tolerant so we can help feed nations where there's not a lot of agriculture or growing conditions are poor. But it's an opinion and it's political and it's very charged. So I mean, everybody has to read up and make their own decisions.
I think so.
And that's something now that I believe has to be on product labels. I'm not sure fully. I mean, there's discussion talking about potentially removing that. Or I shouldn't say it has to, but I see it on a lot of labels. It'll say non-GMO.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You see that more and more.
So even when you go to the grocery store, you know, the numbers, the PLU numbers, if it's a 9 in front of it, it's organic or considered organic in the U.S. If it's just 4 numbers, it's conventional. But if it has an 8 in front of it, then it's GMO.
Okay, and that was an important, that's a great thing to point out, because I know there was different numbers
yep.
in front. And mm-hmm. so that's on all those little stickers on your fruits and vegetables. Okay. So if it has an 8 at the front of it.
Exactly, it's GMO.
Okay, so sounds like they are labeling them.
Yep.
Is that just fruits and vegetables, or is that on the wheat and the rice and in that?
Now, with wheat and rice, those are all processed things. And so labeling those.
Is it good?
Is tends to be more difficult. They tend to hide it via different names, like soy lecithin comes from soy, and 90% of soy comes GMO in the United States. So they're trying to relabel stuff to make it a little harder for you to find out what it is.
So you said 90% of soy products in the U.S. are
GMO, yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, like soy milk and soy beans and...
Anything
oh,
soy.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
We better start looking at our label. I don't know. If you care. I mean, I guess that's the thing.
I just never thought
about...
That's
interesting.
Yeah. I know corn is... A lot of that is GMO.
Yeah. Soy, wheat, corn, sugar beets is a big one. Papaya is another one. What is a couple other ones? There's numerous ones, and they're basically all for the mass production of food. So these
right.
are mostly your processed foods.
Interesting. Okay, that's a lot of good information.
Glad I don't eat a lot of processed food.
Because you grow your own.
I'm trying to grow more and more, yes. And I'm trying to switch completely from conventional to organic.
Okay,
Let's do the black spot on rhodies.
Yes. What causes that black spot on the rhododendrons?
Some kind of a virus, I guess. I don't know that I've ever heard anybody specifically say what it is.
Mm-hmm. For what I've seen, as far as being a landscaper around here goes, is rhodies will tend to suffer if, one, they don't have air circulation in their roots. So we're in a really wet continent, and they tend to get waterlogged a lot, and we get a lot of rain. And so when we get a lot of rain and there's not a lot of oxygen going to those roots, for one, we get a lot of leaching of our nutrients out. And then the waterlog is another issue. But when we start losing a lot of nutrients out of our soils, then we start seeing nutrient deficiencies in our plants. And one of those is a magnesium deficiency, which can lead to start with a black spot. And that's why you recommended, I think, Epsom salt.
Epsom salt, yes.
Is one. It's a really good source of magnesium. And you can use that on a lot of different other plants, too. Your tomatoes, you can use them mm-hmm. for. And a lot of your other fruiting bodies, like your fruit trees, blackberries, currants, stuff like that. Magnesium is really critical for cell building and everything like that. So if you want really good cell walls, especially in your fruit, like your skins of your apples, magnesium plays a pretty important role in that. Again, it goes to that proactive part about being organic. If you find a problem, using those methods proactively, like let's say my rhododendrons this year, I automatically put Epsom salts in the springtime because I don't want to see the black spot. And so I'm doing it proactively so I don't ever get that. But if you don't see your garden or you don't walk by your rhododendrons like I do every day and you start to see black spot, then you're going to have to be a little more drastic. And that might have to be with some of your systemic. I think you recommended a product.
I learned at one of the Master Gardeners meetings in Juneau that they use a product called Bayer Systemic, and okay. It's for acid loving. And I think I only use it once on each plant in combination with Epsom salt. The black spot was gone. Flower production seemed to be about the same.
Very good.
So
very good.
And you said Bayer Systemic. How is that spelled?
B-E.
I think it's B-A-Y-E-R.
Okay.
It may
something
be.
Different. It's in
a blue
bottle. It's not like bear. It's not like a
grizzly
bear.
No.
Not like the animal. Okay. And how much of it do you use?
Well, since my roadies are in containers, I always do like a quarter of what the recommended dosage. So if it would normally be a cup to a gallon, I would use like 4 tablespoons or 3 tablespoons to a gallon.
And earlier this is before we went on air, you were saying you put it around the drip line. But if you have it in a container, do you really have a drip line?
You don't have a drip line.
So how do you apply it?
A tablespoon. I've got like 5-gallon containers.
You just put it like at the edge of the container?
I put it out at the edge, like it would be the drip line under a plant, just out at the edge. And I don't use very much. And I do it twice in the spring and once in the fall. Mm-hmm. And knock on wood, my roadies look great. They're just starting to bloom.
And if they've already got the black spots on it, is it just sort of over time they'll get healthier or what happens?
It seems like, the new leaves coming out after the first dose of Epsom salts, they come out much healthier looking.
Definitely.
Okay, and we do have a caller, and I should point out this is a call-in show. We have about 10 minutes left in the show, so if you'd like to give a call, 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723 if you have a question or a comment. And joining us is Cindy. Good morning. Apparently, Cindy hung up. So if you'd like to call back again, 225-9655, 1-800-557-5723. Or perhaps you answered her question while we were...
Oh, I would hope so. But I hope she calls back.
Yes. Yeah, and again, we do have a little bit of time if you have some questions. Any other tips on rhododendrons? Because they're certainly prominent around here.
Well, I've seen people who have... where the roadies have gotten very leggy, take off a third of the plant this year. I mean, just take it off. Then the next year, take off another third, and you will see a tremendous difference in how full and lush the leaves are and how many more blossoms you have.
Is there any tips on how to cut them back? Do you need to get, like, right down to the... I guess I don't know my plants parts right down.
So you can cut it back to whatever structure you'd want. So basically, when you prune a rhodi, you have a root system, let's say that's 3 feet wide, and then you have a canopy that's 3 feet wide. And then you go and you cut it down to about a foot, right? So now the root system is way bigger than the actual canopy. And so what the plant ends up doing is saying, I just got a haircut. This springtime, I need to flush out some new growth. And so it'll spend most of its energy at that point putting out new growth and then setting up buds for next year's growth. So once you do a dramatic rejuvenation on a plant, especially a rhodi, it'll take you 2 years before you actually get flowers again. So go ahead and cut it back to where you want, and it's okay if it doesn't have any leaves on it or anything like that. You just cut it back to a nice structure that you'd want. And one thing you can do is after you prune it, after you cut it down, take a little knife and scratch the sides just below where you cut. And that kind of gives you an entry point for those buds to actually start forming there. It's kind of like a little trick.
Describe that again, I guess. So you cut off a branch, and then at that
scar,
you're doing what? You're notching where?
I'm just scratching the bark right into the cambium layer.
So you're saying not that it's like next to it, above it, below where you cut it off?
Just below it.
Just below it.
Yep.
Okay.
Maybe about an inch or two below your cut.
And then how deep are you scratching?
You're just scratching maybe, you know, a centimeter. Just to where you see a little bit of green.
Gotcha. Okay, now I understand.
And that green layer represents the cambium layer, and that's the active growth layer in that bush. But when you do that, it kind of tricks the tree into putting out another set of buds right at that cut line.
Okay, we lost another caller. I don't know if something's going on here, but
no.
Afred was making a call, and maybe you answered his question as well. So if there is some sort of a phone issue, please call back. Cindy and Afred, 225-9655, 1-800-557-5723, and let our answerer know, and we'll try to troubleshoot what's going on. But otherwise, if we answered your questions...
Woohoo!
Yeah, woohoo! We're glad that we could do that. What was my other question? So what time of year should you be cutting them back? Does it matter?
Right now.
Right now is the time. Now, the one right outside my door, you can see like the buds forming and all that. That's okay if they're already budding?
If you're going to do a radical rejuvenation on a rhodi, you'd want to do it now, to basically get as much growth going for this summertime and get it ready to harden off for this winter. Because if you do a radical rejuvenation on a rhodi in July, you cut it back, you make your mark, it starts to bud out, and then in September we have a cold spell, and those leaves haven't had a chance to harden off yet. You'll basically lose all that growth for this year and possibly kill the plant because there's no foliage on it.
Okay. All right. And we do have Afred on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm wondering,
Hey, Fred,
Fred,
can you turn your radio down?
I just did.
Okay, great. Thanks. Go ahead.
I have blueberries, haskettberries, raspberries, and I have rhubarb, haskettberries and blueberries, and grass. And I'm wondering if I need to put soil sweetener on the soil for those things.
To change the pH of your soil?
Yeah.
Have you taken a soil test? Have you?
No, I haven't. I did a long time ago, but I don't remember what it was.
Are they growing well?
They seem to be.
Well, here's my thinking. In my yard, if it's doing well, I'm not going to do a drastic change. But if you're concerned about the pH of your soil, I would either buy a good soil test and do the test myself, or I would get the soil and find someplace, usually an extension service through Alaska Extension, and have them test it, and they will send you a list of what's really good about your soil and what you can improve.
Okay, now, I've made all of my soil, so it's different. Does grass usually need soil sweetener?
So soil sweetener, you meaning like lime?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So lime tends to raise your pH. And so if you wanted to remove some of the moss from your yard, you could add lime to it, and that would take care of a lot of your moss problems.
Oh, that's great. Oh, thank you so much.
Some lawns around here are moss lawns, I've noticed.
So is mine. But if you were to try to fertilize your blueberries with it, you could potentially kill your blueberries with that lime.
I'll keep it away from them.
Very good.
So no lime for acid-loving plants.
All right. Thanks so much.
Good point. Thanks. Thanks, Fred, for that question. Yeah, that was a good way. And we have a lot of acid-loving plants.
We do. Can you make a solution with your lime and then use your sprayer and put it on the moss? Is that how you spread?
You can. Yeah, okay. Definitely. Or you can just sprinkle the granules out onto your lawn. I think most garden centers here, they have the dolomite lime.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty slow acting. So it takes probably a couple of weeks for it to start kicking in and working in your garden. And so using the granular form will tend to make it last a little longer too. Instead of you putting it in a liquid form, spraying it on, you might have to do it every couple of weeks.
Oh.
That way, versus once a season.
Okay, we just have a couple minutes left here. So if there's any last questions out there, give us a call, 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. And again, we don't have much time left. Is there anything else you want to talk about these subjects we did, or something else you wanted to bring up?
One thing that came up was when and how do you divide the perennial primroses? Well, again, going back to the Juneau Primrose Society, they divide as soon as the flowers are gone. They'll dig up the clump and break it up and then replant those. You know, whether you put them in 4-inch pots for, you know, moving or giving away, or put them right back in the same hole that you dug them out, do that. When I dig up a clump of primroses, I'll cut it in half, put half back in that same hole, and I'll take that other part and break it into smaller pieces. One thing I don't do is break it into individual plants. You know, it's like kicking one kid out of the house and expecting him to thrive. Make sure that he has company or it has company. I think they do better. You know, that's my heart speaking, I guess. I don't know. But that's what I do with primroses.
Live in pairs.
Yes, plant, live in happiness plant, with your relatives. Yeah.
I have to say is there used – I can't say I've seen primroses in my neighborhood this year. Usually I see them. How unusual. I don't know. That's interesting that you bring up the primrose. I did see the crocuses come up, certain, you know, things like tulips, certain bulbs coming up, but I haven't seen the primroses.
Well, talking with people at the plant sales, a lot of people lost their primroses this year. And so, you know, go to the plant sales. We always have primroses. We have bunches of different kinds.
Yeah, I wonder what happened.
I think the freeze and thaw and the 70 today and 25 tomorrow has a lot to do with what survives and what doesn't.
Definitely.
Hmm.
And if you buy, I can't get the grocery store variety primroses to grow in my yard, but if I buy the perennial ones, they live forever, I think.
Hmm. Okay. All right. Any last minute things you want to add?
Take pictures of your garden. I'm seriously. Brag about your garden. Show it off. You never know when somebody may want a picture of something.
Okay. Definitely.
Very good. All right. Well, thank you both for being here. And again, thanks for the calls and questions and lots of good information. And it is, again, we have mostly acid, a lot of acid-loving plants. So that's a good tip. That's one that will stick with me is don't be putting that lime out on your acid-loving plants.
Right.
You'll do them in. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Lee Skidmore, CJ, David Schofer, and again, thanks to them and everyone else. Get out there, have fun gardening in this lovely, lovely spring weather. It's 5 minutes before 9.